Hey everybody, welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com, movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Bromley and I'm super excited for this week's show. It's Free Space Day for Junesploitation, which means we are digging into the Canon archives to talk about one of their biggest and best movies. 1987's Masters of the Universe, which means I am joined by the man at arms, Adam Ritzky.
Good journey, Patrick.
Good journey, Adam. Yeah. Are you excited to talk about this movie?
Yeah, this is like a bucket list episode.
Oh, for real?
This was one of my first movie obsessions when I was a little kid.
You know what's one of my bucket list movies is The Bucket List.
We could do that.
I've never seen it, and I don't ever want to talk about it.
But it's so good.
It's Nicholson's like last movie, right?
How do you know?
I think you're right. Okay. Yeah. Better movie, but not very good.
Yeah, I remember like the third act, like weirdness with The Bucket List was there. So Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman are both dying of terminal cancer.
Right.
Nicholson is super, super wealthy and like is jet setting all over the place. Probably not realistic. And Morgan Freeman is like a guy that he meets in treatment and like he takes him along and stuff like that. And he's just like, you haven't seen all of these places? Come with me. And then Morgan Freeman's family is like, can you die at home with us, please? And like he's just like, I've never seen all these places. And then his wife is just like, you're kind of being a dick. And then that's sort of like the third act conundrum. And I'm just like, what a weird movie.
Yeah, the whole terminal cancer of it all is what kept me away.
Yeah, I don't know. But they do have a John Mayer song at the end credits. And he's like, say what you need to say.
I know that song.
Say what you need to say.
Your body's wonderland, Morgan Freeman.
I want to run through the halls of the... We're just doing John Mayer
the
songs.
Hospital.
I want to scream at the carcinogenic lungs. Sorry.
Anyway, this is a Masters of the Universe
episode.
There's
no such thing as a copay.
I hope everybody's Junesploitation is going well. We're about halfway through it at the time that we record this episode. How's your Junesploitation going?
It's good. It's taken, how many years have we done this? 10?
This 11? Is like our 11th, I think.
It's taken me until the 10th/11th year to figure out the best way for me to do Junesploitation.
Okay, and what is that?
Which is, I watch the stuff kind of ahead of the day because I'm either writing about it or doing a show about it with Rob. And then I will watch stuff at your house for like double features and stuff when you have people over.
Yeah.
And then the rest of the time, I don't put that much pressure on myself.
Okay.
If I feel like on the day, like, yeah, this seems like it'll work. Otherwise, like sometimes, like when I'm planning it, it'd be like, oh, it's Monsters Day. I've got these 7 movies I want to watch. And I'm like, but it's Tuesday. It's like, I can't do this. So.
You can't do a 7 movie Tuesday?
I try. But no, it didn't really work.
That's the new feature they're advertising at Classic Cinemas. 7 Movie Tuesday.
Yeah. It only costs $50.
Did you hear the Draft House like fired their projectionists because they tried to unionize? It's another reason to not go to the Draft House.
Except for Free Willy. And then
oh,
out.
That's right. It's like when I bought KISS tickets before Paul Stanley opened his fucking mouth.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember when the Draft House was opening, they were talking about, like, yeah, we're going to show film there, too. And then, like, when they opened, they're just like, yeah, we're not doing that either.
Nope.
So, among the highlights of Junesploitation, I started off the month with Sidekicks for Teenager's Day. It's obviously just kind of like a Chuck Norris Karate Kid knockoff with Jonathan Brandis. It was cute. I had fun with it. It's very 90s, but it's like, it takes me back to, you know, I'm the target age group for it.
Okay.
Like, it makes me feel kind of like I'm a kid back in the 90s watching, like, Saved by the Bell shit.
Right,
I just read The Last Action Heroes book that came out.
You finished it already?
I did.
Holy cow.
Yeah, and then Chuck Norris is one of the 8 featured actors that they talk about. And the book kind of gave me not that I want to like study his teachings, but it's like given me a lot more admiration, I guess, or respect for Chuck Norris, because he seems to be like kind of a do-gooder pacifist, but not like in an annoying way.
Okay.
He seems to be, I don't know, just kind of very aware of kind of like who he is and who he isn't, and not trying to push things, and very kind of amenable to people and stuff like that.
Okay.
And then it made me want to watch Code of Silence, so I put that on my watch list, but I haven't watched it yet.
It's probably the best Chuck Norris movie.
Yeah.
I think. I don't know. That or Invasion USA.
Yeah.
Which I love. Even
I have seen that one.
It's reprehensible, but it's great.
Yeah. So I watched that. I watched Master of the Flying Guillotine last night for Kung Fu Day. But that was like my fourth movie of the day, and I was kind of checked out, and I was like writing in a notebook and looking at my phone and then kind of like looking up every once in a while and being like, oh, there's a fight. So I can't give it really any type of a take, but it was okay.
Yeah.
I watched House on Haunted Hill at the Music Box in Emerjo.
Right.
It was kind of a special event
that
they were doing. I'll preface this by saying I love the Music Box.
Oh, boy.
This was a dud.
Oh, really?
It was a huge dud.
Which part of it?
The Emerjo.
The Emerjo was a dud?
Okay. Yeah, well, it basically was like an improv show with a movie in the background, kind of like Rocky Horror a little bit.
They were like shadow casting the movie?
They weren't shadow casting the movie, but they would have like plants in the audience like screaming at stuff, and then they had
I don't care for this.
And then they had some like kind of tricks and stuff, like, but they were all like at the front of the stage, so like if you were sitting in the back, you're just like, well, something's going on over there. They had like strobe lighting to like cue you to like, oh, look on this side and look on this side. But like, it wasn't immersive at all.
Okay.
The coolest thing that they had was they had the skeleton that kind of was on a fishing line that went from like right of stage to like in that little window thing kind of to the side of the screen.
Yeah.
And then it went all the way back to the balcony. That was towards the end of the movie. That was kind of neat, but, yeah, I don't know. It was like everybody kind of built it up. Like, there was a lot. Like, the pre-show was cool because they had, like, a house, like, on the screen with, like, lightning effects. It kind of looked like a U-log type thing. And, like, people were amped and, like, ready to see something really cool. And I was sitting in a seat that was super uncomfortable. And I'm just like, oh, there's probably a buzzer or something in it. And, no, it was just uncomfortable. But, like, everything was happening on, like, one side of the theater. And, like, it was mostly in the front. So luckily, at least I was on the side of the theater. Stuff was happening, but I was like way in the back.
Yeah.
People were doing a lot of like the ironic laughter thing, especially at the beginning, which was kind of obnoxious because like stuff was happening that wasn't like you would swear it's like opening night of Home Alone 2 or something. I'm just like,
why 2?
Because less laughing than it wasn't bringing down the house, but it was still,
so it was like opening night of Bringing Down the House.
Yeah, kind of a little bit. Man, racist like that movie. And people who aren't, I'm sure. I don't know why.
I saw it. I do not remember it.
I remember seeing it in 03 and being like, they went too far. And I'm not like a wilting giant or anything like that. But it was just kind of like a weird experience that after it was over, it was like, well, that didn't really work. Mm. So the thing that I was kind of noodling like on the way home is, did Emerjo always suck? Like, was it always
maybe,
kind
of
like a hype thing?
Right.
And like what we saw in Matinee is
best case scenario.
Best case scenario.
Right.
And like maybe this is kind of because they were saying like, well, we kind of studied what he was doing and we added a few things ourselves and stuff like that. And I'm just kind of like, well, maybe this is kind of how it always was.
Yeah.
But like I heard stories about, you know, like little kids in the 50s, like bringing slingshots and shooting it at the skeleton and like buzzer seats and things like that.
Right, right.
So I was expecting stuff like that or like people like run through the crowd and stuff. And none of that stuff really happened. The thing that I really wanted to happen that totally didn't happen was I wanted like a ghost of a 1950s child to be next to me, to either right or left. Like I look over and like the kid's just like, not a lot of bites today. And he's got like a fishing rod and he's wearing plaid and he's got like blood coming out of his nose, but he's translucent. And I'm just like, do you like movies here? And he's just like, I love Midnight.
because that's when the scaries happen.
They're showing Shrek at midnight. I love Shrek because I like the donkey.
I would love to have around the world in 80 days, midnight.
Did you hear they're showing Coyote Ugly at midnight? Whatever happened to that Piper Parabo?
Oh, man, I give my arm for a Key Largo midnight.
All his references are hopelessly dated because he died in the 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
So I didn't see that. And then today I watched Raising Helen. And John Corbett, Kate Hudson, directed by Gary Marshall, his follow-up to The Princess Diaries. Same year as The Princess Diaries 2, and let me tell you, he saved all the good stuff for PD2. RH sucks. It doesn't make it, the title bothers me for two reasons. Because it's a play on Raising Hell.
Right.
But she's not, like, bad at all.
Okay.
She's, at worst, it's just like, I have a successful career. Now my sister died and entrusted me with her children. Like,
can't
what
have
am
both.
I going to do?
Can't have a career and kids.
Exactly. Yeah. So there's that. And then, like, she doesn't do anything wrong other than, it's not like she needs to be raised. It's just that she doesn't have kids, so that's not her life. Mm-hmm. So it's like, she's very successful and responsible in what she's already doing in her career. She kind of has like a Devil Wears Prada type job where she's like an agent for models and things like that. But it's like, there's nothing for her to learn really other than just like, well, this is what my life is now. So it's weird.
She learns to love Corbett.
He comes on too strong in this.
I haven't seen it since 04.
It's not my favorite Corbett thing. So.
Not your favorite Marshall either.
Not my favorite Marshall. No. There's not a lot of the Marshall touches where it's like awkward pauses for like extras. It's like he
weird
heard us
extras.
Talking about this
right.
And he like backed off.
Family member extras.
Yeah. Joan Cusack has like a main supporting role, but she's just kind of like a scold the whole time, which can be fun because it's Joan Cusack, but it's sort of like a bummer like every time that she's because she's there to like drive the plot of like, you need to take care of the kids and stuff like that. And then, I don't know. It's the weirdest thing about the movie was it feels just like you're watching the day to day of somebody in this situation with no like
plot
or poetry to any of it.
Right.
It's just weird. It's like, okay, well, I guess this is how it would go.
Right. It sets up a circumstance and then just plays it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a little disappointing. Better. Was today I watched Hollywood Dreams and Nightmares, the Robert Englund story.
Right.
I rented it. I know it's on Screenbox if you're a subscriber.
Oh, I am.
Okay, good. I am not. I liked it. I thought it was better than most of these kind of pop culture documentaries. The thing that I enjoyed about it was all of the talking heads were people he worked with, like other actors or directors or writers. It wasn't like any type of fanboy type thing.
Good.
He's very erudite. He's very, like, invested in his career. So, like, him having anecdotes about... And they cover, like, a lot. It's, like, the 2+ hours, I would say, like, the Nightmare on Elm Street section is maybe, like, 20, 30 minutes.
Oh, wow.
And then, so there's a lot of stuff
before...
To cover,
like, 8 movies?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff, like, before and after... that he gets into. And the thing that was my favorite takeaway about it was just like, he's so excited about everything. Like, it doesn't matter if it's Freddy Krueger or if it's like his part in 2001 Maniacs that was made for $1 million. He like comes at it with like the same enthusiasm.
Sure.
And that was really nice. And then he kind of has like a thing towards the end where he says that, you know, his career was a happy accident, but he feels kind of like a privilege or a sort of a responsibility because he's the only one who's kind of like, the heir to the throne of like the actor as horror icon and not just the character. So it's like,
oh, okay.
Vincent Price like, you know, Boris Karloff, stuff like that. He's like, oh, I'm kind of the only one of my, you know, and he doesn't say it in a snotty way, but like, he's the only one of his stature who's kind of still doing that.
Yeah.
So he sees it as sort of like this privilege and everything like that.
Tobin Bell would beg to differ.
He'll get there.
Robert, I heard you were shit-talking me. Now we're going to play a game.
Yeah.
That game is called longevity. I would like to play it for just as long as you.
Let us compare resumes, Robert. One of us was in Malice.
The same year I was also in The Firm.
What a year!
And In the Line of Fire.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, he was on a roll.
Is In the Line of Fire good? Because I haven't seen it since the theater.
I haven't seen it in a long time, but okay. I liked it a lot. It's Wolfgang Peterson kind of in the pocket.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah. Yeah, so I would definitely recommend that. It was kind of weird, like some of the people who weren't in it that I was expecting to. It's like, there's no like Lisa Wilcox. There's no like Shoulder, Hopkins, Harlan, Tulele, no Bob Shay.
What the hell?
So like there's Lynn Shay, you got Heather Langenkamp, of course, Amanda Wiss. There's a bunch of people. And then also it's kind of interesting from a personal life standpoint. They get into like his relationship with his current wife and how long they've been together and kind of like their dynamic and where they met on 976 Evil.
No.
She was the set decorator to the movie he was directing.
Yes, he was.
And I've seen them all the time. Like they're always together at conventions. Yeah. So it's kind of understanding like kind of what they're like together was cool. It's not salacious at all. It's not even like a scene where it's just like, and then one day Robert had a headache and it's like, I remember the headache day. It's like, we had to run to get him. Have you heard of Tylenol? Like, it's not even anything as controversial as that.
Okay.
So, yeah.
You were sending me screenshots of some of the people involved,
yeah.
Which I thought was pretty. Danny Hassel,
Kelly Jo Minter.
KJM. Mm-hmm. Tammy Lauren.
Andrew Devoff. They're all there.
Actor as horror icon. Exactly. Devoff, hello.
So that was kind of tangentially 80s horror today.
It counts.
And I kind of saw some 70s horror because I saw Gary Marshall's Raising Helen and he was in his 70s when he made it. And it sucks.
Yeah, that was one of our May 31st anniversary movies. Erica and I just did our 25th one of those. But
nice.
The year we got married, Raising... It's always like a bad movie because it's always around Memorial Day and we'd already seen what was good.
You see the one that you want to see. So it would have been Day After Tomorrow?
It was like we had the leftovers. So yeah. It was Raising Helen that year. And that was the first and last time I saw it.
Yeah. I'm glad you guys are both together. So.
Me too. Raising Helen failed to tear us apart.
Imagine if you
despite
were
despite its best efforts.
Imagine if you were on a date and like Raising Helen was the movie that your partner was just like, I don't think this is going to work. Like something, and you're just like ruining the day that you took.
Your partner can't stop laughing at Raising Helen, and you're just like, wow, we have nothing in common.
Just like if I took her to see Super Size Me, we would still be married. But I had to get all cute with Raising Helen.
I love it.
Yeah.
What'd you think of? We did a slasher double feature of The House on Sorority Row and Curtains.
It's the highlight of Junesploitation.
Oh, nice.
One of the highlights of my movie watching year.
Yay.
I really enjoyed both of them. I'll stick with Curtains first. I have a real love, I've noticed, of movies that were shot, stopped. Somebody else comes in. And
what are the other ones?
Spookies.
Oh, right.
That was
you
the
do
best,
love Spookies.
That was the best part of going to House on Haunted Hill. They had a table, and I bought the Spooky soundtrack on vinyl for $25.
Well worth it.
Yeah. So
does it come with like fart sounds?
I hope so. Yeah. But yeah, Curtains is just nuts and is creepier because of how little it comes together and makes sense.
Right.
But I really enjoyed it. One of the things that was kind of fun was, I think this happened during both movies. You had left to go do something, and me and Rosalie and
Steve.
And Steve. Sorry, I had to burp. Me, Rosalie, and Steve were like downstairs trying to figure out what the twist was. So I'm just like, have any of you seen this? And they're like, no. And I'm like, I haven't seen it either. I think it's this. And then I was right the first movie.
Okay.
And I think I was wrong the second movie. I'm trying to remember who I guessed for
Curtains. I feel like the Curtains would be easier to guess than House of Sorority Row.
I guessed, I think, Wincott for
okay, that makes
for
sense.
Curtains.
Yeah.
And then for House on Sorority Row, I guessed correctly that it was like, you know, the pregnancy at the beginning right. didn't go the way that we thought that it
the
did.
The reason that I have a hard time predicting that is because every time I watch House on Sorority Row, I forget that prologue.
Yeah.
By the time we get to the reveal, I'm like, oh, right, that was a whole thing that we sat through.
Yeah, yeah. No, but I think that I'm just kind of maybe in October going to watch a lot more 80s slashers that I haven't seen because I just really like them yeah. more than I even thought that I did. Because I was always, like, into 80s horror, but, like, slashers weren't always my thing.
Okay.
But over the years, I think I'm finding the humor in them a lot right, more than right. I did, and that's my in.
So. And this was a really good period. Like, the first half of the 80s, there's so many. Just even the 83 trailers that we watched, yeah. like, I could have shown any one of those movies.
And yeah.
been very happy.
Totally.
I only have a couple to talk about. I watched a movie called The Price We Pay, the Price We Pay.
Okay.
Starring Emile Hirsch and Stephen Dorff. And it's directed by, I'm going to mess up his first name, Ruhei Kitamura, who did Versus and possibly No One Lives. He's done
I've
like
heard
a
of
lot
no one
of
lives.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
But like look at the poster for The Price We Pay. Doesn't it look like yeah. Hell or High Water or something?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like these two guys and Emile Hirsch's brother. Emile Hirsch is like in major Redbox territory these days.
Okay.
They like rob a place and then as they're getting away, they get kidnapped by like organ harvesters, and it turns into just this insanely gory organ harvesting movie.
Okay. It's like a horror movie?
Yeah. I mean, I tweeted out that it's like From Dusk Till Dawn by way of Hostel.
Okay.
Because the first half is like this crime movie, and the second half is this kind of gory movie. It's streaming on Peacock. I don't really recommend it. There are two gore gags that are pretty spectacular near the end and I won't spoil what either one is, but it kind of fails to make use of Stephen Dorff and Emile Hirsch. I mean,
that's a feat.
He's you know, he wants us to know that he's a big boy and he's an adult and he wants us to know.
So he's kind of doing like a DiCaprio Departed Redbox performance?
I guess, yeah. I don't know what he's doing. He's paying a bill or something. what else? Last night I watched Brooklyn 45, which is the new Ted Gagin movie. Ted Gagin made We Are Still Here, which is a movie I really love.
Mm-hmm.
He made Mohawk, which is a movie I really like, and I was really excited to see Brooklyn 45. It played the Chicago Critics Film Festival. I wasn't able to go, so I'm very happy that it dropped on Shudder last Friday. And I knew very little about it, so I won't say much about it. It's about a group of friends coming together at the sort of tail end of World War II in December of 1945 to perform a seance. And it's mostly like five people in a room talking. It's not real heavy on the horror stuff, but it works. I really liked it. I would recommend that one.
I don't know if it's just from the stills that I saw, but it looked maybe a little like Innkeepers-ish. Is it anything kind of like that?
I mean, it lacks sort of the sense of humor of Innkeepers.
Okay.
It's not a very funny movie because the stuff they're talking about is real dark and serious.
Got it. Okay. Sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's totally worth seeing. I don't know what else to talk about, really. I watched Rappin' on Canon Day. Did you ever see Rappin' with Mario Van Peebles and Kadeem Hardison and Eric LaSalle?
That sounds promising.
It was Canon's attempt to reproduce the success of Breakin'. They were like, oh, there's a new popular fad called rap music. Let's make a movie about that.
Yeah.
And it's like a musical where people are rapping all the time. Mario Van Peebles plays a character named Hood, if you want to know just how socially conscious the movie is, who just got out of jail.
We'll get there.
And he's a rapper. And all the raps, because it's like mid-80s, like early rap,
all the rap is like rap, 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 rapity rap.
Yeah.
It's all very talky and like all the rhyme. And there's a whole number about like their heavyset friend and how he can't stop eating.
Yeah, because
they're just like insulting him and making fun of him. It's all, you fat piece of shit, you just the food. It's very weird. It's great. 4 stars.
Excellent.
And then today we went to see Hairspray, the Fathom Events 35th anniversary screening of Hairspray, which I always avoid Fathom Events because I hear such horror stories about how poorly they put on their shows. And those stories were not wrong because we sat down to see Hairspray and it was cropped to 2:35. So the top and bottom of the screen were just cut off.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was great. So we got to see about 2/3 of Hairspray.
Excellent.
But Hairspray is great. It's one of Erica's like 10 favorite movies, and it makes so much sense that she loves it because there's so much in that movie that I'm like, oh yeah, you as a kid would have totally responded to this.
Yeah.
Hairspray is great.
Hairspray used to scare me.
Interesting.
When I was a kid, because it was on Showtime or like HBO. Like it was maybe a year. Did Divine pass away before the movie was released, or was it after?
I think it was after.
Okay. It was definitely before it played on cable.
And, oh, okay, that he passed away?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I remember, it's a faulty memory, because this couldn't have been how it was, but kid brain me remembered, like, they'd be like, at 7 o'clock is Hairspray, and then they'd just be like, black and white footage of Divine, and it's just like, Divine died before you're watching this. And I was just like, and you know, I'm a little kid and I'm just like, he died? What? I'm like, what happened? And I was just like heartbroken. So like it kind of took on, like it became scary. We'll get into that later with more stuff that I thought was scary, because Masters of the Universe has a little bit of that too.
There's one kinder trauma moment of Masters of the Universe in particular. So Hairspray comes out in February
of 88.
Divine, of 88, and Divine died like first week of March, so right around the same time.
Yeah, I don't know why Showtime in my memory went like black and white slow-mo, you might die because Divine died. That's how my kid brain read it. So I was just like, okay. So I'm not saying that's what kept me from the theater today, but no. Yeah, I haven't been to a Fathom event in a while, mainly just because
they suck.
Yeah, I mean, like, if I'm going to go to see Rep in a chain theater, like, if it's, like, AMC $5 faves where I can use, like, my stubs, or if I go to Classic Cinemas where I know you're going to put on a good show, or Critics Classics are going to, like, give a shit, like, thing. But, like, Fathom events, it's just, like, corporate nostalgia, $15. And I'm like, really? Okay. Yeah. So,
yeah, it sucked because it was like, oh, these tickets are overpriced, but it's a chance to see one of Erica's favorite movies.
You're
on
never
going to
have that chance, really.
No, but then we go and they fuck it up. And it's like, oh, we're not really seeing that. We could have gotten this experience at home.
Yeah.
So, whatever.
Yeah, you got to go to the 7 o'clock. They'll show it right.
They'll fix it.
Yeah.
Let's talk Masters of the Universe.
Sounds good. Real quick before we get into that.
Yeah.
I just want to say, like, I had inexplicably on June 9th, on Friday, my most successful tweet of all time.
Oh, I saw this.
And it was just me harmlessly saying happy anniversary to A Perfect Movie with a gif of Herkimer Homolka, played by Tim Curry, eating a bite of sesame cake from the movie Congo, because Congo was celebrating its 28th anniversary. I was like, surely this will be like Daniel Epler and like three other people will like it. And I'm just excited about Congo in the moment. 100,000 views, 979 likes, 21 quote tweets, 75 retweets.
And
82 replies. And I looked through some of them, and most, there's like three basically that were just like, this guy is crazy, or like, what is he talking about? But like, everybody else was just, I'm like, if anything, there's like this groundswell for Congo that I did
not
know about.
You're ahead of the curve, baby.
So I don't know. But yeah. I thought that was fascinating.
I'm glad that you're keeping that movie's legacy alive.
I try.
Amy thanks you.
Oh, clean drop drinks for all. Yeah.
Dylan Walsh thanks you.
Yeah.
Well,
I gave him money once.
you did.
So, Masters of the Universe.
M-O-T-U.
Would you like to know what the critics said in the newspaper ad?
Of course I would.
Okay. All right. I'll start with the least exciting one. Okay. There's two. They're very long-winded.
Oh, boy.
All right. So this first one is from the Los Angeles Herald Examiner. Masters of the Universe is exciting, escapist entertainment from the first battle sequence to the last. It's like something out of Lucas Spielberg heaven.
Okay.
And the other one, which I might accuse of being hyperbolic, the Star Wars of the 80s. A spectacular fantasy sure to appeal to the adventurous spirit and moviegoers of all ages. This is the sword and sorcery epic against which all others now must be judged.
Holy shit.
Dolph Lundgren is Conan, Rambo, and Rocky rolled into one, a muscular superhero in the great tradition. That was from WPBA
that was
Radio
from
in
M.
Atlanta.
Golan Cannon Films.
All others must be judged.
Wow. The Star Wars of the 80s disregards the two Star Wars movies they made in the 80s.
This is better, apparently. I will say I think I like Masters of the Universe more than Return of the Jedi.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Return of the Jedi, when we watched it for After This Movie Fest, I feel like played better than it ever has for me.
Okay.
And watching Masters of the Universe this morning was one of the worst times it's ever played for me.
Interesting you should say that, because this was the worst that it's ever played for me.
Have we just aged out of it?
I don't think so, because I still like it a lot. It's okay. Just that I, for whatever reason, in past viewings, and I probably have seen this movie at least 10 times, always looked at it with the enthusiasm that I did from the 80s, and I got swept up in it. And this time, for some reason, I was just like, not a lot's happening.
I was very tired and started to find the movie very tedious.
Yeah.
About halfway through. Like, I was on board for a lot of it. I was like, yes, I get what you're doing, Canon. And I know a lot of this is my childhood nostalgia, but like, this is a movie directed at kids. And it's giving them a lot of what they want out of a He-Man movie. Mm-hmm. And then at a certain point, I was like, oh, we're just fucking around with this key.
Yeah. Which I think is, like, kind of a neat MacGuffin compared to other MacGuffins. Because, like, it plays synthesizer music. Has to be a Japanese synthesizer.
That's, like, the one joke of the movie is that they think it's Japanese.
But the whole, like, like, we should talk about, like, Bill Conti doesn't know what movie he's making, because he's putting everything into this.
There are a couple Canon movies that have such good scores.
The score in this is unbelievable.
That they would like use them again in other Canon movies, in particular in Canon trailers.
Mm-hmm.
Had this come out like 2 years earlier, this would have been the score for every Canon trailer, because they like have a great score on their hands. But this comes at the sort of tail end of their run.
Yeah, and that whole history is crazy.
Yeah.
With what happened with this one, it was like, I didn't really know. I mean, I've seen that Electric Boogaloo documentary.
Yes.
But from what I was reading, it there was you know, this and Superman 4 were like the big shots, and Over the Top were like the bigger projects
all the same year, right?
Yeah. And they were pushing in all their chips, and they wanted to do a Spider-Man movie, but then they decided, they're just like, we need to have even more money for Spider-Man, so we're going to use the profits we make off of Masters of the Universe, the profits we make off of Superman, and that's going to go into Spider-Man. And there was like stuff involving junk bonds and Mattel and other companies were revoking rights to certain things, and these movies failed at the box office. And then the sequel to this was supposed to be an Albert Pune movie.
Yeah, it was.
And then that didn't happen. And like, Dolph Lundgren would have been recast with Laird Hamilton, and all the sets and costumes were repurposed for Cyborg.
Yeah.
And it's just like, so fascinating. Like,
every time I watch Cyborg, I have that in the back of my head, and I'm like, what Masters of the Universe movie were they going to make?
I guess they went to like a shittier neighborhood in this one.
Because it's the Masters of the Universe not supposed to be post-apocalyptic, which Cyborg very much is.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they just took like the real stuff and just like set it on fire for a while. And then they're just like, okay, now it looks post-apocalyptic.
I love that Canon, like, decided to burn out rather than fade away.
Sure, yeah.
So this is a big, big year for them, and I love that they took their three big swings. I like Masters of the Universe, and I like Over the Top. Mm-hmm. I can't come around to really liking Superman 4. Of the three, that's the only one that I don't think I can
I need to sanction. Revisit it, because taking a Beverly Hills makes me want to watch Superman 4, yeah. And me liking Superman 3 more than anyone from F This Movie Fest makes me want to rewatch Superman 4. One thing I will say that I kind of feel happy that I had this experience was I sort of have two experiences with Masters of the Universe. The one now where I'm very aware of the canon of it all.
Right.
But when I was 5, when this movie came out, I had no idea about anything with canon. So sure. I had, like, with Superman 4 and with Masters of the Universe, it's kind of funny because, like, I wasn't going to the movies all the time. But my parents were just like, two canon movies one summer. It has to happen. So, like, so we saw Masters of the Universe. I had to wait, like, several weeks because my parents didn't want to take me to the first run. So we waited until, like, the second run theater to see it. And there's all this buildup where I felt like this movie was going to be the biggest thing of 1987 because some of it is just, like, my, you know, enthusiasm goggles. But part of it was, like, two doors down from me. The kid that I was friends with had a Masters of the Universe poster that he got as a mail-in rebate from Oreo Cookies. And I was just like, and I saw this giant poster of a shirtless Dolph Lundgren. And I'm like, one, please. I need that in my room. The kid across the street from me had like the sticker album. And he was just like, you got the sticker album too? And yeah. I was like, yeah. He's like, come over. Like, you know, we'll look at our stickers thing. And that was kind of when I finally found out about like the class system, I think. Because like I went there and I had like of my album, like maybe 30 stickers. And he had like 71. And he's like, I don't know. Maybe if your parents made more money, then we could get more stickers. And I was just like, you're a motherfucker. And then like, I don't know. So, I didn't like that kid. So
lording his stickers over you.
He had like such sticker clout. And then I was just like, can I buy this whole thing on eBay?
Oh, right.
It's very expensive. You can get like kind of incomplete albums for reasonable prices.
Yeah.
But if you want like the full thing, it's like $450.
Oh my gosh. It's to have like the four stickers together that make Karg.
Yeah.
Karg. I need the full Karg.
We'll get to Karg.
Okay.
We got to get to Karg.
Yeah.
And then I saw in theaters, it was everything that I wanted it to be based off of my history with the television show and with the toys and everything like that. And I still have burned in my brain the commercial for the action figures, which they only had three from this movie.
They had to be the new characters,
they were the new characters.
Karg, Gwildor, Blade.
Gwildor, Blade, and Sawrod.
Really? Not a Karg? They had a Sawrod?
Sawrod had Sparky Mouth, which was cool.
Okay.
And I remember being like transfixed by that. And then I thought this was in the trailer, but I did some digging and I found out it was in the toy ad where there's a part in the movie where Blade is like, I've been waiting a long time for this.
I remember that.
And I remember that line. Like, it didn't hit anybody in America harder than it hit me. And I'm just like, I've been waiting a long time for this. I'm the one who's been waiting the longest.
Bring it, Goddard.
I'm just like, you stab me one eye.
So him and James Tolkien should have played face-off twins.
James Tolkien takes the term tongue-in-cheek acting.
Oh, boy.
To a literal level.
Him and this movie has a Tolkien / Gwildor problem.
I'm in on the Tolkien problem.
You know, you like Gwildor?
I don't mind him.
I find Gwildor annoying and is depended upon too often to be like comic relief.
So
why didn't they just use Orko?
I guess.
Hard to do the effect?
But that's stupid, because they do other effects that are, like, probably just as difficult as Orko.
Yeah.
They have giant Skeletor holograms.
Right.
In Eternia.
Right.
Giving his, you know, keynotes and things like that. I don't know.
Doing the end of Nation's Pride.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, well, he's a ruler trying to, you know, if the shoe fits. So, you had meant, I want to talk about the kinder trauma aspect of it, because especially in 87, I was.
Oh, I know what yours is.
I have like four in this, but like, it was way more intense than I expected it to be.
Yeah.
And there are certain things that didn't like, scare me, but I was on edge, like during, you know, the bounty hunter, so to speak, like the Karg Beastman, Blade Sauron, like attack on the high school.
Yeah.
Like, people's faces are bleeding. Yeah. And it's just like, you don't get that intensity in current movies. And then, like, they go to Courtney Cox's house and they attack John Corbett, Andrew McCarthy, wannabe looking guy, Kevin, who's the musician. And
His name is Kevin Corrigan, by the way.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It is Kevin Corrigan.
Which is just so great because I just want him to stir the sauce.
They're like throwing him around and they're like stabbing tables and like putting collars on him and shit. And then there's the funky leg thing with the lightning fingers.
So that was my kinder trauma, was the Courtney Cox's pizza leg.
Yeah, pizza leg is...
was gross, and I was not ready for it at 10 years old.
It's still gross. It's way... It looks like...
It's weirdly violent for a...
It's strange.
PG kids movie.
It's strange. I saw this once as in Theater 2 at the Music Box as a midnight movie.
Interesting.
This was like in 07, 08. I was very drunk.
Okay.
Apparently, according to my friends, I was yelling a lot during the movie. I think more, but people like...
Fuck you, Evil Lynn!
People were like into it, I guess. Like, which I would have killed me. But like back then, I one of my friends said that when the pizza leg thing happened, I just yelled, "There's no going back from that." And
truer words, my friend.
Yeah. And, the joke was on me, because not to overshare, over the years, God has blessed me with skin problems, so I don't have pizza leg, but I'm just like, I have enough of like a sunburn type of look there, where I have to cover it up sometimes, and karma's a bitch, is my point. But the thing that messed me up the most was Skeletor popping out of the water and saying, "I'll be back." And I made it through the entire movie. There was an Adam Riske cut of this movie where I asked my dad to remove "I'll be back." So look out for that. It'll probably
it's
get
available on
at some
streaming.
Point. Yeah.
On the Criterion Channel.
But I was curious, because when I watched it yesterday, I was just like, what is it about that scared me so much? And I think some of it might just be the violentness of how he whips his head out of the water.
Okay.
I think part of it is just because I didn't really understand, like, that the movie could keep going after, like, for a beat after the credits.
Okay.
The fact that I'm always used to seeing him with the hood on.
This is the only time we see the bald skeleton head.
So I think that, or unless you count when he's falling and stuff.
Oh, sure.
But yeah, that really fucked me up. It was like that Land of Confusion video, Pizza the Hutt's laugh, Dan Aykroyd at the beginning of Twilight Zone, the movie, the spider jumping at the beginning of Arachnophobia. That was like my kinder trauma top five.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like the Land of Confusion video is in there.
Oh, fuck it. I hate it.
I loved it. I was all about those weird puppets. I don't know why. I used to watch like... whatever those shows were, Spitting Image and DC Follies and everything that had those fucking weird puppets, because I just couldn't... I didn't get the jokes. I was like, this is all politics. I don't get it, but I just like looking at these puppets.
In that last Action Heroes book, there's a lot of Ronald Reagan talk, because him and Stallone apparently were like side to side for a little while.
Not cool. Did you know Dolph Lundgren almost killed Stallone?
In Rocky IV?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know that until I just was reading the Canon Film Guide today, the chapter on Masters of the Universe, and I didn't know that story.
I didn't know that. I knew that he put him in the hospital because Stallone wanted him to punch him for real.
And he almost died. His heart, like, swelled. And
it was something like it pushed into the lung or something like that. Lundgren comes across very well in the book. Like, this seems like a real menschy guy.
In life. Like, he just is somebody that I can't... see anyone saying anything bad about.
Yeah. I mean, like, the worst of it is just like, yeah, I was dating Grace Jones and we kind of got like, I got a big head and I was a little out of control for a while, but like, then I wasn't. And it's just like, oh, of course, Crasher. Okay.
And I think he comes off well in this movie. I don't think he gives a great performance because he's still kind of stiff. I don't know who could sell this material.
Laird Hamilton.
Laird Hamilton, obviously. Yeah. But like, Dolph Lundgren is the kind of guy who, like, if he didn't exist, you'd have to invent him to play He-Man.
Yeah.
He just fits the bill to such a degree, and it's like, yeah, he does seem a little embarrassed holding his sword up and saying, I have the power. But, like, who the fuck wouldn't be embarrassed about doing that?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it worked for me at the time, and I think it's... Yeah, I mean, he does seem somewhat uncomfortable, but that's sort of him not being able to speak comfortably on screen
yet. Yeah, he's not really an actor yet.
But it bums me out because, like, he was saying, like, I don't know if he still feels this way. I know that there's been more recent documentaries about, like, Netflix did one a few years ago about He-Man. But at some point in time, he said it was his least favorite film role. And I could see that. I mean, like, it doesn't always seem like, as much as we enjoy watching canon movies, it doesn't really seem like making canon movies was great of a time.
Yeah.
But Frank Langella had a good time. He said this is one of his favorite roles.
I mean, God bless Frank Langella. And I know he's now canceled, but like, he's so good in this movie and he commits to it so hard. Do you think when he falls into the pit at the end, do you think he made a big splash?
See, I do. And I think there's a reason for it.
Okay.
So apparently his son wanted him to be in this movie.
Right.
And he was always like running around yelling, I have the power and all this stuff like that. I think his son said, Dad, let's go to a water park. And then Frank Langella is just like, what is it, son? And he's just like, I've been looking over your scripts and I would like you to make a big splash. And I know just the project, and he moved it to the top of the
You
pile.
Have to play Skeletor. I mean, the fact that this movie, I get that, like, it kind of helped bankrupt canon because it was a $22 million movie. And that was very high for them, you know?
Yeah.
But, like, look at what they get for $22 million.
It looks good.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of the, I think Richard Edlund did the effects.
Yeah.
I mean, the money is on the screen, and, like, there's a lot of...
And then some, I would say.
Yeah, and there's a lot of, like, you know... I mean, it seems part and parcel to higher-budgeted fantasy movies from the early 80s, like, where it's got that kind of tactile phoniness that's kind of... that ages well.
Yeah, even the rubber masks and the Skeletor makeup and the Karg prosthetics, you know, like, all that shit, I'm so in on... I don't know. All right. Tell me if you're willing to go with me on this.
Okay.
It's the sword and sorcery movie by which all others should be compared.
You mean like it's kind of the perfect middle?
No, I'm joking. I'm just referencing that quote from the movie.
Let's take this back. I screwed this up.
It's okay.
I screwed it up. My joke is turned against me. Karma's a bitch.
Pizza leg for you.
Pizza leg for all.
I'm Skeletor.
I'm putting Jardiner on your pizza leg.
Did you know that Mattel or Canon producers, somebody wanted Meg Foster to wear contacts?
Oh, yeah. And then I'm guessing they saw her stare. And yeah.
Just was like...
Yeah. If there's anybody who never needs contacts.
You also want to cut off John Holmes' dick? Like, what are we doing?
I'd rather get fucked by Meg Foster's eyes than John Holmes' dick.
No, listen, there's no contest. But I just thought it was weird that it was like this thing for which she is very famous.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, no, put contacts on.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. We can't afford what won't cost us money.
So we like the makeup. We like the effects. We like the music.
Mm-hmm.
We like the performances for the most part.
I like the characters.
Sure.
I think that...
I'm not all in on Kevin, because Kevin's a little insensitive. Kevin's like...
I'm a little?
Kevin's all like, your parents died. It happens. Come to my sound check.
To be fair to Kevin, when I shouldn't be, She's leaving.
Right.
And he's probably hurt. And he probably is just like, fuck it. Bedside manner maybe is out this out of the window.
Maybe.
So I don't know.
I don't know if that's it.
If I like, you know, obviously, am I saying that I would handle it the same way Kevin would? The part of me that is petty probably would handle it the same way Kevin would, where it's just like, look, you're leaving anyway, like, and I have to hang out with you still, like, I'm hurt, like.
Let's eat chicken and go to my sound check.
Yeah, chicken and sound check. Hot dogs and a ball game, or chicken and sound check. That's where hot dogs and a ball game are friends.
Right.
Dinner and a movie is a relationship. Yeah. Chicken and sound check is when you're breaking
when
up. Is
when things are over.
Yeah.
Your parents are dead and your girlfriend's moving away. It's time for chicken and sound check.
There's nothing fucking better than those sweet life support dates. You gotta love the life support dates. Where it's like,
let's. The dating meet. Equivalent of like taking an animal out behind the shed and just like, yeah. We both know it's coming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. One time I had somebody where it's just like, you know, it's so good when it's just like, come with me when I run an errand. Like, it's like, oh, God, that's what I live for.
That was in the early days. Like, Erica would get me to tag along to do anything with her. Like,
yeah.
Because I just wanted to be near her. So she was like, I have to go drop off a paper at Oakden Community College. I'm like, I'll come.
It's perfect bookends, though, because like, that's the great way to start out a relationship is
right.
You fold people into your day.
Right.
It doesn't
yes.
have to be like the big date.
Right, exactly.
You don't have to take the girl from the bowling alley to analyze this in a fancy Italian dinner. Sometimes she just wants to go to the bowling alley. She was telling me who she was. Sorry, I'm having a flashback. And then the end of the other bookend is like, come with me on this errand, and it's just because like I don't want you to think this is romantic.
Okay, right.
Yeah, there's a lot of ennui in between. And yeah, good times.
We were talking about the characters. You like the characters.
I still get that 5-year-old sense of enthusiasm when I see, like, oh my god, it's Blade, Karg, Sauron, and Beastman. Because Beastman,
the whole gang.
Beastman was by far my favorite when I was in kindergarten.
Yeah, he was my favorite. Like, in the movie or, like, as the toy in the cartoon?
Started as the toy, but then as, like, things developed, like, in the movie. I just seeing Beastman on the screen, it's like when people are just like, I like Transformers because it has Transformers
yeah,
in
right,
it.
Right, right.
You know, granted, they're 40 and I'm 5. But like, but when I was 5, there was nothing more exciting than seeing Beast Man on screen.
Yeah.
So that was cool. And then if there's a tweet that should have gotten as popular as the Herkimer-Hermoka one,
yeah.
The one I may be proudest of
okay.
in my entire history of tweeting, and if this offends you, it might. And I'm sorry, I guess, or not. So I said there was a picture of Karg, Sauron, Blade, and Beastman standing next to each other. And I said, Paul Ryan, Kellyanne Conway, Mike Pence, Steve Bannon. And it got like 3 likes.
Oh, it's funny stuff.
Because they kind of look like that.
I think I once made the same Kellyanne Conway Karg joke. I think like...
Mm-hmm.
There was some red carpet or some bullshit where she like had hair that was going back like
yeah.
that. And it was like, she looks like Karg from fucking Masters of the Universe.
I would totally rather fuck Karg. But I kind of just want to fuck Karg. Cause like, if you're going to like, cause like if you're going, say like there's the 4 of them and they're just like, you know, they see you from across the bar and like
yeah.
you're in a weak spot and you're just kind of like, well, it's been a while. Like you might as well just go for it. Like
sure.
just go nuts.
Yeah.
And you're just like,
yeah.
like Karg.
Karg.
Just go for the Karg.
I'm ready to take you to bed.
I want you to run an errand with me. I'm just like, oh, fuck, is this the beginning or the end?
Look, I brought us some chicken.
It's just like, I dyed my hair. And I'm like, oh, it's definitely the end. This is a breakup date. That's the worst, too, on those breakup dates.
Okay.
It's always
I had
like,
one a long time.
I know you haven't. It's always like, you meet up, and then the girl is like, who is a brunette, like, has blonde streaks now.
Uh-oh.
And you're just like, oh, you're washing the me out of you.
Yikes.
Yeah, that's when you know it's over.
Oh, snap.
Do you think Chelsea Field has enough to do in this movie?
Of course not.
Do you like when she looks at camera and says woman at arms?
Yes.
I like that there was a quality back then.
I just love Chelsea Field more than I should. And she almost never got enough to do in any movie she's in.
Yeah. And even when she did, it was like, it was for like the last Boy Scout, which is a thankless kind of part.
Yeah. And it's a weird like thing where the romantic lines are like, fuck you, Sarah. Those are some breakup lines.
Yeah. Bruce Willis does not come across great in that book.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Because the thing that was interesting about him was he seems like his curse is that he was in a movie holding a gun and did really well. Okay. And like he was tied to that for the rest of his career and he didn't want to do that ever.
That's wild. I feel like he kind of could have gotten away from that, right? I mean,
I don't think so.
He had other movies that were hits, or was he only in hits when it was Die Hard? I guess around that time he's doing like Hudson Hawk and Bonfire of the Vanities and like shit that's not blowing up.
He definitely had like a fallow period outside of action until
a Peter Fallow period.
Oh my god, yeah, that's where that came from. All the neurons. They're not.
You're still thinking about Karg.
Oh my god, Karg. I'm just saying, if you saw him shirtless on a beach, it probably wouldn't be that bad. He's just like, hello!
Can I play Frisbee?
That's a pretty righteous bonfire you got going over there.
Anyone got a guitar I can play?
Don't go in that water. Jaws is in there.
Karg.
Yeah. Oh, Karg. So, and then, so I think I kind of like this more than Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's something about kind of the piecemeal aspect of it all appeals to me. Like, I like that there's so few sets that they can use.
Yeah,
I like
sure.
the throne room that has endless pits where right. it's just like, okay, well, and I'm just a big fan of pits. So, I mean, Brad Pitt, armpits, pits in Monsters Universe.
Friends might be the worst thing to happen to this movie because oh Christina Pickles playing the Empress. Mm-hmm. It's impossible to look at her. Yeah. First of all, not be like, I'm so sorry your last name is Pickles. That is so unfortunate. But also, like, you're Monica's mom. You're not the Empress of Eternia.
I mean, she's Monica's mom. And then, like, Chris Pine's mom plays Courtney Cox's mom in this movie.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's all connected.
Yeah, it sure is.
Good journey.
Is Chris Pine a Masters of the Universe baby?
I don't think so.
No,
because he's older, I think.
I have no idea how old he is.
I think he's like in his late 40s.
Oh, okay.
So
I just assumed he was younger.
Yeah. He's got real Karg energy.
Yeah, he does.
Just a rascal. blah, 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 blah.
Oh, we were talking about Chelsea Field.
Chelsea Field.
And yeah, she does not have enough to do. I mean, that was true of the source material. I was, like, never super into the cartoon. I definitely watched it because it was on when I came home from school. Mm-hmm. I definitely was into the toys. Like, I was excited to see this movie. Like you, I saw it second run. My brother took me.
Mm-hmm.
This and Superman 4 are the only two canon movies I saw on the big screen in their initial runs.
Yeah.
You know, I've since seen a few more. But, you know, Teela and Evil Lyn, like, neither one of them had anything to do on the show to the extent that they were like, well, let's make a new Masters of the Universe for girls and we'll call it She-Ra. And, like, you know. So it's a bummer that they don't give Chelsea Field more to do. I'm not a big John Cypher guy. Man-at-Arms.
What else was he in?
Oh, good question. I'm just talking about him as Man-at-Arms.
When I was 5, I thought that he was like Harrison Ford big. Like, I just... Because, like, he's got that one part where he just, like, nails it. He's like, if you're gonna do it, then you do it.
Good journey.
And he looks like Robert Duvall mixed with Danny Aiello.
He does a lot of TV. He doesn't have many big film roles. He's in like The Food of the Gods, the giant animal movie. He has a small part in Spontaneous Combustion, Toby Hooper. Does Robert Englund talk about Toby at all in that documentary?
A little bit. Okay. Just more like in passing and stuff. You could tell that he you know, was friends with him, and yeah, they like liked working together.
Yeah.
But yeah, they don't go into it too much.
Tobey Hooper was going to do the canon Spider-Man movie.
Was he?
Yeah. At one point.
That would have been cool.
And then it was going to be Albert Pyun. Or Pyun. Back when Tobey Hooper was going to do it, it was going to be like a man who turns into like a giant spider because Golan and Globus didn't really know the Spider-Man comics, and neither did Tobey Hooper. So they're just like, I guess that's what Spider-Man is.
Better than The Flash.
A movie that only gets worse.
You know what?
The longer you sit with it.
You know what'd be fucking cool?
What?
If they did a direct sequel to this upcoming Flash.
Yeah.
And Meryl Streep was added to the cast. And
okay.
It was just also a backdoor Ricky in the Flash sequel.
She's all Republican and shit.
Yeah.
Because that's a weird subplot of that movie.
Yeah. The movie's not good.
It's not great.
No.
Springfield is good, isn't it?
Yeah. So if you want proof that this whole property production experience was cursed, listen to this.
Okay. I'm ready.
The fast food place used for Robbie's ribs and chicken was later the site of the Rodney King beating.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a different fast food tie-in? Was there like a Burger King tie-in?
I don't remember.
Because at one point, Kevin is seen stacking Burger King garbage into a sink.
Oh, yeah.
He's not putting it in the garbage.
Yeah.
He's loading the sink up with fast food garbage.
Well, he turned on the garbage disposal.
He did.
You just got to get it wet. It's fine. It's right down there.
He should have just used the Japanese synthesizer and, like, teleported it back to Eternia. So Skeletor's sitting on his throne and all of a sudden Burger King garbage lands on him.
Yeah.
Ah, what the fuck is this?
I got the Spider-Man Whopper at Burger
King.
Do
tell.
And I'm just like, this is just like the movie. It's dense and visually hard to look at after a while. It was bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, sorry to hear that.
It's okay.
I'm not a Whopper guy, so I wouldn't try the Spider-Man Whopper. Also, I'm just afraid of like the health concerns that I would have after eating it.
Probably. Yeah. apparently, Skeletor's mask.
Yeah.
Well, two things. I have two thoughts on this.
Yeah.
So they did a rush reshoot to film a climactic fight between Skeletor and He-Man.
Because they pulled the plug.
Because they ran out of money.
Right.
I think that it's noticeable how much lower quality the makeup is in that fight on Skeletor when they show a couple of shots of his face. But also, that mask that they used for the majority of the movie apparently was also used in episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation and Deep Space Nine.
Interesting.
There was a skeleton villain that Worf fought, I guess, on one episode.
Okay.
And apparently that was
the Skeletor
repurpose
makeup?
of the Skeletor mask or whatever.
You know, Robert Duncan McNeil, who plays Kevin, of course, went on to play Tom Paris on Voyager.
Well, now I need to watch Voyager.
For seven seasons. You don't.
Does he have a synthesizer?
He doesn't.
Does he eat Burger King and put it in the Federation sink?
He just puts it all in the Federation sink.
There's only one on the ship. Is it Bacula who's on Voyager?
No, it's Kate Mulgrew.
Kate Mulgrew?
Yeah.
I can't do a Kate Mulgrew, but she's just like, again.
Oh, but not this. She's kind of got a Katharine Hepburn thing. So if you can kind of do Katharine Hepburn, that's basically Kate Mulgrew.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I can't do that.
sort of tight-lipped and like, who put all this Burger King in the sink?
Yeah. I love reading my notes because sometimes I just write stuff like, this movie's exciting, or like, great laser gun shit going down.
Well, so it's interesting because critics obviously hate it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would argue it's not necessarily made for them, right?
Yeah.
It's directed at kids more so, or if you're the one critic, it's a fantasy sci-fi epic for all ages.
Yeah.
Why couldn't critics of the day sort of see that, like, oh, this movie isn't directed at me?
They can't now.
I feel like...
Has it ever been that way?
I feel like people have gotten better at recognizing... I feel like I have. Like, I know when a movie's not made for me.
I don't know. I feel like...
Even movies that were made for me aren't made for me anymore.
I get that. Like, I definitely get that. I just think that there's a certain... I don't know. I always struggle with this because I there's plenty of movies that aren't quote unquote made for me based off of my demographics.
Yeah.
That totally work for me just because of the story or the performances or whatever. And there's plenty of movies that are made for me that don't work.
Yeah.
But like, I think that, I don't know. It's strange. It's just like, I can't really collect my thoughts on this one too well, but like, I feel like critics, like when something isn't for them, they kind of take on airs of like it being a chore and sure. like you have to win me over. And it's like, they can't meet it on a certain ground level. I think that happened more pronounced like in the 80s and 90s
yeah.
and stuff like that. But I also think that, and I don't know I'm going to get myself in trouble about like how to separate like real critics from fan critics and stuff like that. But like, there's so many more fan critics now.
Sure.
Where it's not really like the profession that it once was.
Yeah.
With like film history right. and things like that.
Right.
Where like, I don't know. It's just strange. But then I bristle at shit like when, you know, not to bring her up again, but like when Brie Larson says like, I don't want to hear what a 4-year-old white dude has to say about A Wrinkle in Time. And I'm like, yeah, but I sat and watched it. I gave it its day in court. And if I think it sucks, I'm not going to just say it's great because I want to like not make a 9-year-old cry. I mean, like, it's just a matter of being honest, like, with how you feel.
Yeah, right.
And maybe that's what these critics were doing. I mean, like, it was at the end of the fantasy run that was, like, taking over the 80s compared to, like, you know, similar, you know, trends that are going on today. And maybe people were just burnt out on it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's a confluence of a lot of things.
Yeah.
I think genre movies that weren't of a certain pedigree kind of had a target on their back in the 80s. I think canon had a target on its back in the 80s.
Or even like a pedestal, like people wanted to bring it down. Cause like, look at Willow. Like that was, I even knew like when I was 6 where I was just like, man, this movie's getting hammered.
Yeah.
And I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. Like I'd kill for a movie as good as Willow now.
Yeah. But like people are just like, dead George Lucas. We got him once with Howard the Duck. He's falling off the platform.
Right.
Who's got a bigger rock to throw at him? One thing that I think is, and this is probably due to like the budgetary concerns, and I just said that I like one aspect of it with it being like few sets and things
that.
But I feel like they could have done something to have the logic pass a little bit better of these fucking insane characters just showing up on Earth. Cause like, I get it. Maybe they're in like this small town, but like if you're rolling down Main Street, like somebody is going to see this.
As a kid, I didn't question like that choice in terms of like bringing them to present day Los Angeles. Right.
I think so.
It wasn't until I got to be an adult where I was like, oh, they just couldn't afford to like do Eternia for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So let's set it all in Los Angeles, which is like not great. You know, if what you're paying for is like, I want to go see the cartoon, but live action, like you're not quite getting that.
Yeah.
But I think you get enough of it that I just think, you know, it's a movie kind of born out of cynicism. The He-Man cartoon existed to sell the toys.
Mm-hmm.
The movie existed because the cartoon was and the toys were popular. It's, you know, it's nowadays this is how everything gets made. But like it was certainly born of cynicism in the 80s. And yet I do feel like everyone involved in the making of it, their hearts were in the right place.
I agree with that. And also, I think sometimes the better product comes out of people who aren't beholden to the source material. Sometimes I feel like, especially nowadays, where we're like catering so much to audience expectations and not just like, I'm an artist, I want to do it, my take on something. I think that, you know, this didn't, Wikipedia didn't exist at the time, but this definitely feels like the powers that be at Canon or Gary Goddard or like the screenwriter, like read the Wikipedia page of Masters of the Universe. And it was like, okay, I got the gist of it.
Right.
These are the characters. This is what interests me. and here we go.
Yeah.
And I think that that's what more movies need, because then it stops you from having the same take on everything.
Right. Yeah, for sure.
Like, I would love for James Gunn to have never heard of Superman before and then just read a summary of, like, okay, this is Superman, and just do his thing and
right.
just be and see this weird version of Superman. So,
which
could happen.
We might get, right. I don't think there's any chance he's not heard of Superman before, but he might just do his own thing when it comes to Superman. Who knows?
Yeah.
What do you think, as someone who legitimately gets a little charge of excitement every time the Canon logo opens mm-hmm. a movie, like, what is it that makes their movie so special?
That's a really good question. I think I think it just kind of harkens back to more freedom.
Okay.
In terms of what kind of art came out. I also think it kind of harkens back to just what movie culture was at the time, where there was enough of it, but not too much. Where, like, because now there's just so much out there that there's really no way to, like, have a grasp on a monoculture.
Right, right.
But, like, now it's sort of like, okay, these are the movies that are on theaters, and then, like, or then it was like, these are the movies that are on theaters, and then there's, like, a few, like, I'll stumble upon in the video store and yeah. stuff like that. And there was, like, a sense of discovery and a sense of kind of, like, just sort of anything can happen to it. And I think Canon, to their credit, you know, I thought this, I was saying this with Rob when we were talking about, like, American Ninja.
Yeah.
It's just, like,
yeah.
they knew the outline of what this movie had to be, but how it became that could be very idiosyncratic. It sort of was like what you hear with, you know, like Val Lewton movies and Jacques Tenier movies and stuff. It's like, here's the title, go make cat people. And, like, it's not the cat people that, like, right. most people would gravitate to first. And I feel like Canon kind of had a lot of that imagination and creativity. And even though it seemed kind of schlocky and chintzy, maybe at the time, I'm not sure. It seems kind of quaint and very rootable in an underdog kind of way.
Yeah, I think that's part of why I love their movies too, is because they're always working at the edge of their abilities. You
yeah.
know, they come so close to, like, trying to compete with the majors, but they can't. And so there's this sense of, like, well, let's give the people things they're not going to see in a major studio release.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that everybody agrees on is, like, they were bad businessmen. They were probably not great to work for.
Yeah.
But they genuinely loved movies and, like, ate, slept, and breathed movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that comes through. If you're somebody who loves movies and all kinds of movies, I think there's so much cool shit and, like, fun to be had in seeing Canon movies, because so many of their movies are boiled down to, like, the stuff we like in movies. So if you're going to go see yeah. a Masters of the Universe movie, it's like you're going to see outlandish characters, sword fights, laser guns,
mm-hmm.
a big sweeping score. You know, I said it was a little tedious, like the plotting and let's go get this key and now we got to go over there and somebody took the key and Gwildor, you know, there's things in Masters of the Universe I don't like, but, like, the stuff that pops is the stuff I want out of a Masters of the Universe movie. And when I go see a Chuck Norris action movie,
mm-hmm.
I want to see Chuck Norris karate kick someone in the face and, like, shoot a bunch of bad guys.
Yeah.
And they're going to give me that again and again and again. And they, you know, I love that they were in the business of, like, creating their own stars. And they got, like, these house directors, you know, Sam Furstenberg comes on and mm-hmm. makes a bunch of movies for him. And Michael Winner comes on and makes a bunch of movies for him. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I don't love every Canon movie, because I think I would be lying if I said that, like, I watch Sinbad and I'm like, this is so good, you
yeah.
know, but I do genuinely get excited about watching any Canon movie.
Yeah. And I think also some of it is, even though, like, obviously they were a business and that's what their primary goal was to exploit certain elements to make money. I thought of this not in relation to canon, but like it's kind of coming together. I have another theory now that I've thought about it. I think one thing I noticed about myself fairly recently is that I gravitate towards things like cover bands and not actual bands, or like independent local baseball just as much as like regular baseball, or okay, like dollar theaters even more than stuff, or dead malls and stuff like that. Like, I kind of like the thing under the thing that it's supposed to be.
Okay.
And I often find myself starting from a place of gentle mocking to slowly realizing, oh no, I love this and I'm being defensive about it. But okay, then like I can very easily kind of turn the page with that. And I think that canon sort of has that element where it's sort of like, you're being honest with yourself of like, you want this. There's a place for this.
Right.
This is not something to be mocked. It's just that we've been conditioned into thinking that things that are of a certain prestige are automatically better, right, when sometimes they're more hollow than the thing that's just faithfully trying to be what it is without any type of sense of embarrassment. And maybe as I get older, like I'm starting to kind of realize that, because it's just like, this seems so genuine. Like if I go to an independent baseball game and stuff like that, they're there for the love of the game.
Right.
And they're not making any money. They're like living with house families and stuff like that, which sounds like a nightmare when you're like in your 20s, right, and stuff like that. But canon kind of has maybe a similar thing. Maybe I'm kind of throwing more flowers on them than they deserve, but it's sort of like a for the love of movies.
Yes.
And I think that's easy to spot.
Yeah. I think, you know, for me, it's definitely, I mean, what we're talking about is like the cheeseburger at the end of the menu,
yeah,
right? It's like, if you're a foodie, you can appreciate all kinds of food. You can appreciate the fanciest, most gourmet shit, and you can appreciate a well-made cheeseburger.
Yeah.
I'm not a foodie. I'm fine with the cheeseburger.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm the movie comparison to a foodie, right? And that's why I like all kinds of movies, but I still gravitate towards the cheeseburger. Like, I still gravitate towards canon more than A24, you know, even though I like A24 and I'm not dissing anybody who prefers art movies, independent movies, experimental movies. Like, there's room for all of it. Just don't shit on my corner of it, you know?
Yeah. It's like what you've always, I mean, you've joked to me and like other people about how much some nights you just want Pizza Hut.
Yes.
And it's like, yeah, that's what this is. Like, sometimes that's exactly what you want. It's
right.
Like, sometimes I don't want to dab the grease off with a napkin. Like, give me the full card.
Right. Exactly.
So I have two real quick ones.
Okay.
If that's okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. So better or worse than these other movies that were in the top 10 at the box office the weekend Masters of the Universe opened?
Interesting. I think I know what some of the other movies are, but
okay,
all
right,
not all of them.
I'll go in reverse order.
From number 10,
was Who's That Girl? And its opening weekend.
Better.
Masters of the Universe is better. Okay.
Yeah.
The re-release of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
I'd rather watch Masters of the Universe.
You are correct. Back to the Beach opening weekend. Number 8.
Back to the Beach is really solid.
It's pretty great.
I might go Back to the Beach.
Summer School.
Summer School is better.
RoboCop.
RoboCop's better.
Are you sure? The Lost Boys.
Lost Boys is better.
La Bamba.
I'd rather watch Masters of the Universe.
Masters of the Universe was number 3.
Okay.
Stakeout premiered at number 2.
Stakeout's really good.
I need to see it.
Yeah.
And number 1 was your favorite Bond movie, The Living Daylights.
That was the one that I knew.
Yeah.
So, not only do I feel bad because I feel like I'm selling out Masters of the Universe by preferring most of those other movies, but, like, look at that fucking top 10. Admittedly, we've lived with these movies for longer, so, of course, we're going to like them. You don't think so?
No.
Okay.
I just think it was better then. There was more.
I mean, I do too, but I don't want that to become like the recurring motif on this show. It's just like things have gotten so bad.
I thought I was throwing in kind of a new wrinkle of summer thrills where I'm just like, I'm just trying to learn how to exist in this world now.
I appreciate that.
So I'm giving it a shot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, and then better or worse than these other 1987 sci-fi fantasy movies.
Okay.
Batteries Not Included.
This is better.
Inner Space.
Inner Space is better.
Project X.
I haven't seen it since I was a kid because I got really sad by that movie.
Is it really sad?
A monkey definitely dies. Okay. Like, yeah.
Did that song Shock the Monkey from Peter Gabriel come out because of that movie?
I don't think so.
All right. That's another divine died situation. Harry and the Hendersons.
This is better.
Princess Bride.
Princess Bride is better.
Date with an Angel.
This is better.
Teen Wolf 2.
This is better.
Percy Rodriguez does the voiceover. He's just like, Teen Wolf 2. He's like, the wolf is back.
Jason Bateman.
Teen Wolf 2. Okay, Spaceballs.
This is better. I know people are going to push back on that, but Masters of the Universe is better than Spaceballs.
Warrior Queen.
I don't think I've seen that.
Okay. You know what it is, though? Sybil Danning, Donald Pleasance.
I definitely haven't seen it. Okay. And now I'm upset.
The Running Man.
Running Man's better.
And Superman 4, The Quest for Peace.
This is better than Superman 4. Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, even after this conversation, I've sort of have reset to, like, I just love Masters of the Universe, yeah. Even though, like, I know that, I don't know, what for whatever reason yesterday, it was the third movie of a four movie day, so maybe I was just a little tired.
I think for, like, a swing at the majors, mm-hmm. I think it comes pretty close. I think if this had a Warner Brothers logo at the front of it, I don't think any of us would blink an eye.
Probably not.
The canon of it all isn't really apparent, except for maybe that finale that they had to, like, reshoot in a warehouse. Mm-hmm. And that's Blade doing the sword fight for Skeletor.
Yeah.
Anyway, anything else about Masters of the Universe?
Do you think Karg ever has, like, a
thinks about you?
Do you think he ever has, like, a failed date and he's just like, I don't know what their problem was. It's just lunch.
Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for participating in June Sploitation. We've got half a month left, so keep it going. Next week, if all goes according to plan, my friend and co-author Heather Wixon returns to the show to talk about the X-Files movie for Alien Day.
1998?
Yeah.
I need to see it.
The anniversary, baby!
Not to tip that off too early, but can I see that movie without seeing the show?
Or I need to rewatch it, but I haven't really seen most of the show, so...
Yeah.
She's an X-Files expert.
Okay.
So I thought that might be interesting, because I'm going into it knowing very little, mm-hmm. and I'm going to watch the movie and have her explain shit to me, I think.
Did you know that at my wedding with Karg, my best man was Blade, and he leaned in and he said, I've been waiting a long time for this.
Bye, everybody.
Good journey.
Thanks for listening to F This Movie.